You are now listening to Cinema Crespediso.
Ah, here we are.
I'm Hadley, internal medicine. And Dr. Lafon, communicable diseases. Dr. Boyer, bacteriology. And Dr. Stinson, Marston and Gill of the Northampton Trauma Institute. And Dr. Imhouse of the Zurich Relief Fund. These are our newly arrived surgeons, Drs. Trowbridge and Greenbaum.
Doctor?
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 And doctor.
Well, we miss anyone?
Why don't you gentlemen relax? The tribe's planning a raid on a Soviet tank division tomorrow. There'll be plenty for us to do then. Doctors?
Doctor?
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 If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits?
Your $5 ass down before I make change.
Hello? Hello? Anybody home? Hey, think with fly, think.
You dirt-eating piece of slime. You scum-sucking pig. You son of a motherless goat.
Wait, let me explain something to you. I am not Mr. Lebowski. You're Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude.
You're killing me, Smalls.
That guy in a little coat.
You stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder.
Welcome to Cinema Crespediso.
What is up, guys? What is up? Welcome to episode 190 of Cinema Crespediso. That is Cinema Crespediso. That's right, Cinema Crespediso. I am your host, Chris Crespo. It's me. What's up, fuckos? It's me, your host, your intrepid host, the one with the most, the one who eats toast every now and then. Well, we're here, guys. We're doing another wonderful episode. It's just me. No co-host, no guest. It's just me, the microphone, and thou. So I hope you have a good time. Episode's probably going to be a little shorter than normal, although usually when I say that, ends up being longer than normal. So we'll see what happens. But thank you guys for downloading and listening. I really appreciate it. I got to tell you, I'm going to be upfront with you 100%. I am frustrated right now because I've been trying to record this episode for the last 2 hours. You are hearing this now. Count your lucky stars. Count them. All two of them. Count them. Because I was having computer problems. I was having a lot of issues here in the studio. And I was seconds away from taking this computer outside to the street and smashing it into pieces. And I would have felt so, so much better. I wanted to smash it so bad. I still kind of do. Obviously, I would have felt bad later, and then I'll be like, God damn, now I need a computer, and I don't have the money for that, and then the show would have been delayed for weeks and weeks at a time. So, obviously, I'm now in hindsight glad I didn't smash my computer with my Louisville Slugger. But, oh, man, I wanted to smash something so bad. I still do. Still pretty frustrated about a lot of things. But, you know what? We're past that now. We're here. We're recording. Things are going down. And I'm here to give you an episode. I'm going to do this for you guys. And it's going to be great. We're going to have a good time. You're going to love it. And then we'll be back with more pretty soon. So to start like we do every week, we're going to go ahead and jump right into the Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. What do you say, guys? How does that sound? Cool? All right. Good. Here we go.
We got what you see. Movies on fleek. Netflix Instant Pick of the Week.
Netflix gets the pick of the week. Netflix gets the pick of the week.
All right, guys, let's use the randomizer 9000 right here. We're going to grab a movie. We're going to see if it's on the Netflix. In the meantime, you can go to chriscrespo.com, check out the past Netflix picks. I haven't done it in a few weeks. I haven't updated on the actual website, and no one's complained. So maybe I'll stop updating the website. I don't know. I'll probably go back to it. I just got to go back and backdate some posts is all, and then put up this week's. And what is this week's pick of the week? Accordingly to the Netflix Randomizer 9000, Crest Producer Randomizer 9000. This week's Netflix pick is from 1974, and it is a little film called Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry. That's right. Dirty Mary and Crazy... Dirty Mary, comma, Crazy Larry. I probably could have used an N in there, a joiner. Dirty Mary and Crazy Larry. Anyway. Dirty Mary and Crazy Larry is a 74 car film, car chase movie, and it's starring Peter Fonda, I want to say. Is that right? I'm going to double check that. But it's a car chase movie, guys. That's all it is. Check here. Double check. Am I right about that cast? I don't think... Yeah, I am. Peter Fonda. Peter Fonda plays Larry. Larry's a race car driver. He's an aspiring NASCAR driver. He has a buddy who's his mechanic, and the two of them think they're the best, but they want to try to break into NASCAR, and they don't have the money to or the right car, so they need to steal money to try to get the funds so they get legit going to NASCAR. So the movie starts with them committing a robbery, and before they can get away, Larry... The night before, they decided to pick up a chick, have a one-night stand with this chick named Mary. And then when they were trying to get away, Mary shows up and sticks around and injects herself into the duo and becomes part of the team. The whole time, Larry's trying to get rid of Mary, and Mary is sticking around. So the movie becomes Mary hanging out with Larry and his partner and them trying to get out of this town. The sheriff is trying to chase them down. And they're trying to get out. They're trying to get rid of the money. And Larry's trying to get rid of Mary. There's a lot of car chasing. And if you watch Death Proof, you'll probably notice. Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof. If you watch that movie already, and then you see this movie, you'll see a lot of the shots that Tarantino got for that movie. Certain car chase shots and things like that are definitely reflected from that in Death Proof. So there you go. It's a cool 70s movie. Car chase movie. I'll put it up there with The Driver. With... what's his name? Ryan O'Neal, Two-Lane Blacktop, and Vanishing Point. All dope 70s car driving movies. Recommend them all. But officially, this week's pick is Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry from 1974. All right, guys, let's get into the box office recap. Let's see what we got here. Going to boxofficemojo.com. Number 16 movie of the week is a new one. It's called Hands of Stone. It's a Roberto Duran biopic starring Edgar Ramirez and Robert De Niro. It only made $1.7 million in its opening weekend on 810 screens. So a limited release, but not a very good opening weekend. Probably didn't have a very big budget, though, either. So I wouldn't worry about that. Number 13 movie of the weekend, another new one, South Side With You. If you haven't seen the trailer, know what this is. This is the... I can't believe this is a movie. I can't believe they did it. This is the Barack Obama takes out Michelle, not Obama, whatever she was before she married Barack. Barack takes out Michelle on their very first date in Chicago, back when he was a community organizer, and it's supposed to actually. The reviews are pretty good. The trailer wasn't bad. The reviews are pretty good. They say it's a charming film. And it looked okay. For me, though, it definitely looks like the type of see it in on DVD or rent it one day, you know, or watch it on HBO as opposed to run to the movie theater to go see it. $3 million opening weekend at 800 screens, much like Hands of Stone. A better opening weekend than Hands of Stone, I gotta say. So there you go. I'm looking at the list. I see Hell or High Waters already at 12, so not doing too hot. Ben-Hur made less than $20 million after 2 weeks on a $100 million budget. That sucks. Jason Bourne at number 9. $149 domestic. It's making money despite not being very good. Okay, let's go ahead and jump to the top 5. Number 5, Mechanic, Resurrection. Made $7.5 million. No budget listed. Pff, shit budget of, I would guess, like 40 or 50 million. It's a Jason Statham action movie. I didn't see it. I saw The First Mechanic a few years ago whenever it came out in theaters, and I don't even remember it. I barely remember the ending, pretty much. That's all I remember. And that Ben Foster was in it. It's not even like The Mechanic. I guess the original Mechanic, the Charles Bronson one from the 70s, is actually kind of like the perfect type of movie that you want to remake. Remaking older films that aren't as well known and aren't that good, those are the perfect movies to remake because they may have ideas. They may have seeds of an idea that could have been something great, and they just didn't get it the first time around. Maybe another artist could pick up those ideas and make something great the second time around. It's totally possible. That did not happen with Jason Statham's Mechanic, and Mechanic Resurrection looked god awful. Let's see what they say on the Rotten Tomatoes. We are looking at a score of 24%. Not good. Not good. Scroll down. Scroll. Out of only 21 reviews, so actually practically no critics have seen this movie. No one's bothered to see it to review it, which is really funny. So out of 21 reviews, 16 of them are negative. We're looking at an average rating of 4 out of 10. No consensus. So let's maybe see what some people said. Scroll. Andy Webster with New York Times. For an actor who, with the Transporter films, once imbued the action genre with a new sense of possibility and weakened sophistication, Mr. Statham is on cruise control. That's the truth, man. That is actually the truth from the New York Times. Stephen Witte, New York Daily News, who he kind of sucks, but anyway. There's some pleasant globe-trotting. Brazil to Thailand to Australia to Bulgaria and a lot of over-the-top fights, but don't be surprised if after a few rounds you find yourself wishing for the bell. Russ Fisher at The Wrap, he's a pretty good movie writer. This sequel carries forward only two ideas, that gimmicky assassinations that look like accidents are a valid substitute for story, and that Jason Statham can carry an action movie even when it is propped up on such wobbly legs. So he's saying Statham's great, even though the movie sucks. Glenn Kenny, writing for RogerEbert.com. He's a very picky movie critic. Mechanic Resurrection suffers from a script that strains credulity and insults intelligence, even by the low bar set by the majority of contemporary action movies. So apparently no one likes it, not a surprise. That's why I didn't go see it. Not the only reason I didn't go see it, but I didn't see it because there are other movies to see, yo, other things to see. Here we go. Let me take a quick drink here. Yes, I am drinking sangria again. Guys, you want to hear something funny? Okay. First, you're probably wondering why sangria again. Here's what happened. Last week, I came into possession of several boxes of booze. Amongst those boxes of booze were a few bottles of vodka and a few bottles of white wine, Moscato wine, and also a bottle of Moscato Spumante champagne. So I took the vodka and the white wine, got some fake Sprite, you know, public Sprite, got some OJ. Got cut up some lemons. That's how I made the sangria, right? Just push into a huge pitcher. It's been in the fridge all week long as I've been drinking off it. By the time it gets on the halfway on that pitcher, that big pitcher, I top it off. Add more juice, add more soda, add more booze. Now here's the thing. I used up all the vodka in the beginning. So as I added booze during the week, I was adding the Moscato, the white wine. And a little bit of brandy too to booze it up a bit, right? Not much though, only a little bit. And then the other day I was down to the bottle of the Moscato Spumante champagne. So I popped a cork on that fucker, poured that into the cooler with a little bit of the OJ. Do you see where this is going? I poured myself a cup. I drank it. My sangria turned into a mimosa. It was a sangamosa. It was a mimgria. Can you believe that shit? So I had to go, I drank a bunch of it last night and didn't get nearly as drunk as I could have. So I went and bought a bottle of vodka today and I topped off the the mimsgria with some more vodka. I think it's more back to sangria levels as opposed to mimosa levels. And I am drinking again. Hope you're drinking with me. If you're not drinking, I hope you're smoking. If you're not smoking, hope you're doing something with your life that makes you feel good. Because it's the only life we have. Number four movie of the weekend, The Sausage Party, made $7.6 million in its third weekend. So it is looking at $80 million so far in a $19 million budget. It'll probably hit 100 and it's a success. So if they keep the budget low, they'll keep making these movies. For sure. We talked about Sausage Party in the past. episode 188. Go ahead and check that out. Number three movie of the weekend, Kubo and the Two Strings, made $7.9 million in its second week for a total of $24.9 million on a $60 million budget. People, go see this movie. I'm telling you, go see this movie. You know why I'm telling you to go see it? Because I went and saw it yesterday. And you know what? Guys, Kubo is great. It's fucking great. I was into it immediately as soon as it started with the first line of dialogue in the movie, which is daringly and boldly, the first line is, "If you must blink, do it now." And I was like, ooh, bold. I like that start. And it's a great movie. It's a fairy tale, for sure. Fairy tale story involving magical realism and prophecies and curses and stuff like that. And I just think it's fantastic. I really, really, really like the way it was written. I like the characters. I think Kubo's a great character. And I was, like, emotionally into it. I was into his journey and the story about his family. And I liked it quite a bit, I gotta say. Also, the whole stop motion thing is gorgeous. The animation is unbelievable. There's some scenes that I'm watching them and I'm just like, there must be CG in here to make some of this stuff happen. Because, like, there's scenes that are, like, in the rain. How do you make rain via stop motion? I don't know. That it looked incredible. Rolling waves out in the middle of the ocean, huge waves and storms, and it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous movie. A great story, a great soundtrack, good action, some good surprises here and there, a couple things I was ahead of, a couple things that did surprise me. And when it was all said and done, I was very, very happy. I was very pleasantly surprised by how much I liked it. Definitely recommend it. Definitely one of the better movies I've seen this summer. So, Kubo and the Two Strings, guys. I recommend it. For show. For show. Did we talk about it previously on the Rotten Tomatoes? It's sitting at 96% on Rotten Tomatoes out of... How many reviews? Out of 113. Out of 113 reviews, only 5 of them are rotten. So out of 113 people, only 5 people out there are stupid. The consensus. Kubo matches its incredible animation with an absorbing and bravely melancholy story that has something to offer audiences of all ages. I agree with that 100%. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's good stuff. People, check it out. The number two movie of the weekend is Suicide Squad. Made another $12 million to put it at $282 million. Okay, I'm going to talk about this now real quick. Finances. Box office financial reporting. When... You see this a lot, and someone like the Hollywood Reporter will write an article about a movie's finances or about the state of Hollywood finances, and then those stories get picked up by bigger outlets like, you know, Yahoo News or AP or whatever. People regurgitate what they read. Be careful when you read any sort of box office reporting. I've said this before, I'll keep saying it. Be very, very careful. No one knows what the fuck they're talking about, especially if they are not, like, in the industry. Like, they know. I know what I'm talking about as far as I know, you know, and I don't pretend to know more than I do. So I'm telling you now, a few weeks ago, The Hollywood Reporter put out an article where they were like, Suicide Squad is going to be a $190 million write-down for Warner Brothers. How they got that exact number, I have no idea. But it's hysterical that people were saying this movie was going to be a financial failure a few weeks ago. When I'm looking at this right now, on a budget of $175, let's double that budget for the marketing. So we are put it now at $350? $350 million all in. Production, post-production, marketing. $350 million all in. Worldwide, it's already at $635 million. How is it losing money? It's not going to lose money. Whoever wrote that article is a fucking moron. So don't, be careful what you read out there. Be careful what you read. Be careful what you hear. Be careful what you see. Suicide Squad going to make $300 million here in America, despite not being very good. And now for the number one movie of the weekend. Ba-ba-da-ba. Don't Breathe. Do not breathe. Stop breathing. made $26 million this weekend on a budget of just under 10. Don't Breathe. Horror film from director Fede Alvarez, who directed the Evil Dead remake a few years ago for Ghost House Pictures, which is Sam Raimi's company. This is also another Ghost House joint. So I guess he's Sam Raimi's go-to guy right now. For some reason, he got the nod. And this movie is definitely a... How do you call it? It's like a response to the critical reaction of his Evil Dead movie. Because when he made Evil Dead a few years ago, the complaints for that movie, and I had the same complaints, was that the movie was too brutal, like really brutal, and sadistic, and hard to get through. So insanely bloody, to the point where at the end, the amount of blood became a joke. And I think even intentionally. The only bit of humor in the movie is when it starts raining, literally raining blood, and there's blood everywhere. I think that had to have been supposed to be funny, because it was so absurd. But the movie is just humorless and sadistic and not, and also not original because it's a remake. So he made Don't Breathe, which is an original story, you know, quote, original story. It's not about bloody violence and sadism, much more about suspense and tension. And being a thriller type of horror film, as opposed to a bloody, gross, I'm taking a knife and I'm slowly cutting into my own cheek type of horror, right? Totally different. And it's successful in those terms, for sure. It's a very tense movie, very, very tense. If you don't know what this movie is, it's about three kids, pretty much three delinquents, late teens, maybe early 20s, who break into a house of an old man to steal his money. But the old man turns the tables on him, kills one immediately, and the other two were stuck in the house, and the old man's trudging around the house trying to find him. Turns out the old man has something he's trying to hide as well, which is why he just won't call the police. The whole thing also takes place in a rundown Detroit neighborhood, so he's the only one left in the neighborhood, so there are no neighbors or anything. It's an interesting setup, and it's a good story. It's well told, well made. The characters are annoying. I don't like the characters. The three people who break into the house are stupid. For various reasons. They're bad people. So when they broke into the house, the old man started turning the tables and they killed one guy. I was cheering for the old man. I'm like, yeah, old blind man, you get him. And then, of course, it's revealed that the old blind man has his own secrets. He's kind of a terrible dude. So when the movie is over, you're left with no one to cheer for. That kind of sucks. But overall, it's a good movie. I would say it's good. I enjoyed it. It's definitely a rental type of thing. Although, seeing in the theater was good because the sound design for the movie is very important. It's two people in a house with a blind guy, right? They're trying to hide from the blind guy. How do you hide from the blind guy? You're quiet. You got to be quiet. He uses sound to get around. He's like a bat. So there are numerous times in the movie when the soundtrack gets totally quiet. There's no music. There's no sound. There's no nothing. And everyone, like, people are standing around listening intently for any noise. And when you're in a theater with the big screen, that silence becomes deafening. It's kind of amazing, actually. So that was probably the best part of the movie. The whole sound design stuff and the cat and mouse aspect of the chase. So Don't Breathe. I didn't think it was bad at all. I liked it. Let's see what they say about it on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm looking at a score of 86%. So genuinely and generally... Well liked, 86%, 7.1 average rating out of 10. Yeah, I'd go around 7 out of 10. What does it say? Don't Breathe smartly twists its sturdy premise to offer a satisfyingly tense, chilling addition to the home invasion genre that's all the more effective for its simplicity. Totally, totally. So you can go to chriscrespo.com and check out my review of Don't Breathe there. And hopefully I'll have a Kubo review up there soon as well. Okay, guys, new movies come out on DVD. There's The Jungle Book. Jon Favreau's The Jungle Book for Disney. Surprisingly good movie. I really liked it. Definitely recommend people checking it out. Also come out on DVD, Me Before You. That's the Emilia Clarke movie, Khaleesi from Game of Thrones, where she plays some sort of like poor lady who's a caregiver to a guy in a wheelchair or something. And they fall in love, and he, I don't know, it looks stupid, so. I saw the trailer, thought it was looked really dumb, and then I read the Wikipedia entry, and I saw what happens, I read the end of the entry, and I laughed. I laugh because it's so dumb. So if you want a little bit of humor, Google Me Before You Film Wiki and read the plot synopsis and then see how it ends and then laugh and laugh and laugh and be glad that you didn't see it. Or read it and then be like, what, that's how it ends? And then rent the movie to see it for yourself. That's a possibility, right? That's a possibility. New movies coming out in theaters, guys, in theaters. This is Labor Day weekend. So usually Labor Day weekend, you get a few types of movies. They're movies that the studios don't think are going to make much money. So you're looking at movies that are dramas, usually film festival type movies, but that apparently the studio doesn't think is good enough for the Oscar season. Also movies that come out around the first week or two of September, especially Labor Day weekend, genre movies. I remember Dread came out either Labor Day or the week after Labor Day. And that's why I didn't make any money. And it should have made all the money. It's because Dread is so good. So movies coming out this weekend for Labor Day weekend. The Light Between Oceans, which is a Michael Fassbender and Alicia Vikander movie. It's the movie that got the two together because they're a hot item now. They're a good-looking couple, and this is the movie that made them fall for each other. They play a couple who they don't have a child. They're childless, and then they find a baby in a basket, and they raise it. And then I think the real mom comes along and they got to decide what to do with the baby. That type of thing. The thing with the title. The Light Between Oceans. Because he's a light keeper. Or a lighthouse keeper or whatever. There was a Comedy Bang Bang episode where Andy Dalia played a French actor named Jean Pepe. And he said he was in a movie called The Tears of the Moon. And it was The Tears of the Moon was a movie that took place in the time before the oceans. But he says it in his French accent, so it's like, the time before the oceans. And it makes me laugh to hear that. And then when I see this title, The Light Between Oceans, I think of Andy Daly in a French accent saying, the time before the oceans. And it just makes me laugh. So then the moon cries, and the moon's tears become the oceans. Also coming out in theaters this weekend, the movie I do want to see, a film called Morgan. Morgan is it's about a girl who she was a genetic experiment. Toby Jones is like running the whole thing. I think Toby Jones did it. What's his name? The Paul Giamatti. He's there. What's his chick? Mara, not Rooney. The other one, Kate. She is showing up at this facility to check out, see what's going on, see what's up with this Morgan chick, who's a genetic experiment, and she's evolving, and things are getting really dangerous. It's directed by Luke Scott, who is the son of Ridley Scott, which is why it's produced by Ridley Scott. So let's see the next generation of Scott filmmakers. Let's see how he does. I'm actually looking forward to that. So Morgan coming out in theaters this weekend. No Dr. Drew, which means no 2 cents this week. Next week, hopefully we'll get 4 cents from him. Let's take a break. Crespo Disco time. Like I said, one of my favorite parts of Kubo and the Two Strings was the soundtrack. I mean, the Two Strings is a reference to Kubo. He rocks like a magic sort of like a Asian guitar type thing. And it's pretty cool. And so the movie, during the final credits, ends with a very interesting cover of George Harrison's While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And I actually sat there during the credits and watched the closing credits and listened to the song. Because that's how moved I was by the movie and by the music. So here you go, guys. Check out this cool cover, and then we'll be back with the second half of the show of Cinema Crespediso. Hope you're having a good time, because I am. Here we go.
I look at you all, see the love there that's sleeping, while my guitar gently weeps. Gently weeps.
your boy Stone the Terrible.
It's your boy, the Black David Hasselhoff from Forget That Yo Radio. You are now listening to Cinema Crespo Diso,
the number one show for movie reviews. Now back to the show.
This is Eric from Talking Nonsense with Eric and Stacy. Join us every Sunday, 9 p.m. Central on Alt360Radio.com. We're talking news, idiot politicians, movies, TV, Darwin Award nominees, comedy, sports. We're basically two married idiots turning brain thoughts into mouth words. That's Talking Nonsense every Sunday, 9 p.m. Central on Alt360Radio.com. If you missed the show live, grab the podcast at ericandstacyradio.com, Stitcher Radio, or iTunes.
Welcome to the Crespo Show.
All right, guys, welcome back. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. It is me, your host, Chris Crespo. It is me, your host, Chris Crespo. And I'm back, and we're here, and we're doing this thing. Shout out to Juicy Cogburn, who was en route from NYC back to Orlando. That is, if his Delta flight ever took off, delayed by at least a couple hours. Delta sucks. Plugs time, hit me up on Twitter at I am Chris Crespo. Do it. Twitter won't verify me. Fuck them. You know who I am. Also hit up the show at Crespo Diso. Facebook, Cinema Crespo Diso. Instagram, Cinema Crespo Diso. You can email us, cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com. We'll send you stickers. Just put in the subject line, free stickers. Put in the body of the email, your address, and we will send you stickers. It's that simple. It's that simple. Rate us and review us on iTunes, please. If you do nothing else for this show, if you don't tell anyone about it, you don't share it online, you don't let anyone know you listen. If you do nothing else to help us out, at the very least, go to iTunes and rate us 5 stars and write a review. That'll help more than you know. Trust. Okay. Oh, hit up Twitter. Hit up Drew on Twitter. Drew Sacogren on Twitter. At Antihero419. This week, tweet him your favorite Shark Week GIFs. Anything that has to do with sharks. Doesn't have to be Shark Week. Anything that has to do with sharks. Send them your favorite left shark GIFs and your favorite Bruce the Shark from Finding Nemo GIFs and your favorite Jaws the Revenge GIFs. Like maybe one of Mario Van Peebles getting eaten by a shark. Good times. Where are we going to start? What do you want to do, guys? Well, how about... let's do, I have so many things here. This is for later. That's for sure for later. So we're going to do this now. Let's do, you know, Drew Sacogren was just in New York City. You know who else is in New York City? Our New York City senior correspondent, Billy D. You can find him on Twitter at I Love Blood. And he hits us up every week with Billy D's Death at the Movies. So let's see what's going on this week. Billy D hits us up. He writes, "What is up, my dude? What is up, Billy? How you doing, bro?" Drewster is up in NYC still. We've had a killer time. The Prophets of Rage show was dope. That was what, 6 O's, 7 O's. We ate so much babka and barbecue, we almost didn't make it to the show. All four of us were almost done in by our tummies. Impulse ordering quarter pounds of pastrami slab bacon will do that to you. On Friday night, we had dinner and fancy cocktails and a double feature at Fort Awesome. Ooh, nice. I love going to New York City on vacation and then watching movies. I did that in L.A. That's where I watched Primer. I watched Primer in L.A. Not even in a theater. In an apartment. I saw Batman Begins in L.A. in a theater. Anyway. My girlfriend really wanted to show Drew Tusk. My God, what a terrible braggart. My girlfriend wanted to show Drew Tusk, the Kevin Smith movie about the podcaster who goes to Canada to interview someone and winds up in the clutches of a mad seaman. I personally think this is Smith's second best film behind Red State. Billy, seriously? I haven't seen Red State. I did see Tusk, and I wasn't that impressed. Drew's mind was blown. It's a batshit crazy movie that goes way further with its premise than you ever would think. I jokingly refer to it as the Canadian Centipede. I think that is the most fitting description. Sure. The best thing about Tusk is that it is for sure 100% like a Kevin Smith original. It is not a studio movie. It is not something ultra commercial. I absolutely respect that Kevin Smith came up with this really weird fucking idea and saw it through to the end. And also, because you're going on to the next movie you didn't mention here, the fucking crazy scientist guy is played by Michael Parks, who's fucking fantastic. I don't understand. It's one of those things where there's an alternate dimension, a parallel universe where Michael Parks is like the Daniel Day-Lewis of that dimension, that parallel universe. You know what I mean? He is such a great actor. Anytime he pops up in a Tarantino movie, it's fantastic. Go back to Twin Peaks and watch him in Twin Peaks. He's the guy who runs One Eye Jack's. And he's like a creepy French-Canadian dude. Oh my God, he's so good in that. And he's amazing in this movie. Justin Long's okay. Also, I want to point out about this movie. Now, this also show you Kevin Smith's skewed life perspective, okay? How he sees the world. He makes a movie about a podcaster. His podcaster is insanely, insanely successful, where he was bragging. At one point, he brags to his girlfriend about how he makes like $100,000 for live events, or how he makes so much money doing his podcast, which is called the Not See Podcast. As in, I wasn't there, I didn't see it, someone else saw it, so they're going to tell us about it. But we're part of the Nazi party. Really dumb. And of course, Kevin Smith's typical American podcaster is one who is ridiculously successful and makes six figures a year doing it. Which is something for me where, you know, at least Kevin Smith is back to writing about something that he knows about. But on the flip side, it makes me want to say, go fuck yourself. All right, back to Billy D. After that, we watched We Are Still Here, which is still one of my favorite films of the year. I really can't say enough good things about this movie. It's a slow burn, 70s-style horror film in the vein of The Changeling or Don't Look Now. Ooh, that's high praise, Billy. It's even set in the 70s to keep it free of modern conveniences and distractions. We Are Still Here is for sure on the Netflix, so I'm going to have to check that out. A couple moves to a remote farmhouse after the death of their adult son. That actually sounds a lot like Don't Look Now, doesn't it? They start feeling a presence that mother believes is their son, and I'm not going to say much more. Isn't that Don't Look Now? Anyway. This film relies on atmosphere and its characters to tell a story. There aren't any real jump scares or over-the-top violent moments, just a great little horror film packed with cult character actors and some ingenious directing. See We Are Still Here on Netflix, and check out Tusk if you're into that kind of thing. Stay cool, Billy D. All right, I'm definitely going to check out We Are Still Here. Because horror movies, for me, Billy knows, the type of horror movies I like are the ones that are mostly about atmosphere and tension. And like The Shining. The Shining has... There's like one moment outside of the blood pouring out of the freaking elevator, which is, again, that's a moment that's more about shock and awe and atmosphere than actual, ooh, blood. There's only one scene where anything's really gross, and that's the one where Jack Nicholson finds the ghost. Jack Torrance finds the ghost lady in room 227, and like he makes out with her because she's a sexy naked lady. But when he pulls her away, she's like a gross. Her skin's all like waterlogged and disgusting. She's a gross ghost lady. That's like the only gross part of that movie. The rest of the thing is Nicholson going crazy, making crazy eyes, and then the atmosphere of the movie. That's the shit that I like. It's. You know, like Cronenberg is like the exception to the rule for me when we get to like the body horror type stuff. So, thanks, Billy. We appreciate it, bro. You're a good guy. You're a good guy. All right. Let's, now that we heard from Billy D, now it's time to hear from the people. I've been saying since I was on SBK Live on Real Radio 104.1, I've been calling myself the critic of the people, because I am. I'm trying, for years, I've been trying to bridge the gap between the film critic community and the average moviegoer. The separation is ridiculous. You need to look to each other, respect each other. I'm here to fill that gap, okay? I'm the critic of the people. As an extension, this is the podcast of the people. To prove that, I came up with a segment of the people, which is called The Voice of the People. But in Latin, it sounds much better. It's the Vox Populi.
That moment you've all been waiting for. The world famous
Vox Populi. Vox Populi. Vox Populi.
All right, guys, you can hit us up via email, cinemacrespediso@gmail.com, and we'll read your reviews, we'll read your questions, your topics, whatever you want to rant about, we'll read it. We do prefer if it's movie or entertainment related. If you want to branch out, we're not going to stop you. This is your segment. This is the Vox Populi. So via email, we got this from our homie out in L.A., Ron in L.A. New titles is email. Junior correspondent checking in. So it looks like Ron is claiming the title of Los Angeles junior correspondent. If you want to claim your regional correspondent title, hit us up and let us know, man. Hit us up and let us know. Ron writes, "Hey, you guys. So I saw War Dogs and it was a fun movie. I saw War Dogs last week. You can check out my review of that in the last episode. It was a fun movie, which got me pissed off at two things." Oh, that sentence doesn't make any sense, Ron. It was a fun movie, so it got you pissed off. One is that jerks can get greedy and ruin a good thing. And the other is the fact that after all that crime they done, shit that could have ruined... And the other is the fact that after all that crime they done, shit that could have ruined a fucking war and soldiers' lives, all they got was a max of 4 years in prison. Spoiler alert, if they got caught with weed and was black, they'd be in there for 8 years. It's fucking crazy. Ron, that's the goddamn truth though, ain't it? That's the fucking truth. Jonah Hill sold the movie. Agreed. His over-the-top selfish prick act was spot on. Miles, all I could look at was his chin. That has a weird scar. I thought it was funny. They got a hot Hispanic wife while having a horrible job. Yeah, that's true. I am pretty sure not a lot of hot chicks would have stayed with a loser like that. But hey, it's a movie, right? If you're a fan of semi-historical movies, then you'll probably like this one as well. Ron, I gotta agree with you. That whole subplot about Miles Teller's character having that hot, hot, hot girlfriend. And despite being a loser, a huge loser, and having a super hot girlfriend who stuck with him through a lot of his bullshit, like called him lying multiple times, and she kept sticking with him. That is so movie. That's so Hollywood. Add to the fact that when you read the article, the Rolling Stones articles about these two guys, the Arms and the Dudes article, that guy wasn't fucking, he didn't have a girlfriend, he didn't have a baby. Get out of here. That was all bullshit. All right, back to Ron. He writes, "I also saw Kubo. I'm sure as an artist, Darling Drewster would appreciate this film as well." I believe Darling Drewster would appreciate it as well too, Ron. Yes, I do. "Many times during this movie, I was slack-jawed with how well the motion, the action is portrayed. The claymation was done so well, I would forget that the actors were fake and made of clay. That's the truth. The emotions and passion shown in all the heavily detailed crafted figures, be it that they are talking ape monkeys have tails with an arrow shooting beetle, the pure beauty of the film just had me looking at it in awe." Yeah, I agree. "The story was not basic, although the twist you could kind of see coming," right? I think I said that earlier. "Also, after watching Sausage Party, I was trying to see if this movie has some life lessons to teach us. I really didn't see one in this film. It was just telling a story of loss very beautifully. I also thought it was weird that all the major voice actors were Caucasian as two minor roles of Japanese Americans, but that was just an afterthought from a really great movie for the whole family, animation appreciative people. Listening to Chrono Trigger remix right now. Hope your week is blessed and joyful. Best wishes, Ron." Thanks, Ron. I'm gonna harp on what you said there. Yeah, I agree. I forgot to mention that. Halfway through the movie, one of the characters, the Beetle Man character, I kept listening to his voice. I'm like, who is this guy? This guy is so fucking familiar. And then he uttered one line that had that southern twang. And I was like, motherfucker, that's Matthew McConaughey. And sure enough, it was. The Japanese Beetle Man in this movie is voiced by Matthew McConaughey. The mother character is Charlize Theron. It's mostly Caucasians. It's mostly white people doing the voices, which... Okay, whitewashing voices. I don't think that's as big. You know, and you guys know me. You know I love getting up in arms over racist shit. I love calling out racist shit and racist people and bigots and stupid backwoods, retrograde, knuckle-dragging philosophies and thought patterns. I love calling that shit out and calling it bullshit on it. I don't think whitewashing voice actors is so much a thing. would the movie have been more respectful to Asian cultures if they picked Japanese people, Japanese actors to do the voices, but then still do it, still read the lines in English, in Japanese accented English? Would that be more respectful? I don't think so. Obviously, the best would be for a movie like this that is set in Japan, if you could hire Japanese people to do the voice work, have them speak in Japanese and put the whole movies in subtitles. But it's also a kids movie, and like 7-year-old kids just can't read that fast. Fucking adults. A lot of adults can't read that fast, which pisses me off. You guys need to read more. So, I mean, I can kind of see why. And it's also the type of thing with animated movies. They do this with the Hayao Miyazaki films, where they come out first in Japan, and, you know, they have gigantic Japanese movie stars doing the voices for the Japanese release. But then when they put it out in America, they re-record all the dialogue with very popular actors. Christian Bale did one of these movies a few years ago. He was the voice of in one of these Miyazaki films. So that's the thing with animation. You can redub the voices with actors from a specific region. You know, that's how movies like Rio make a ton of money, or Madagascar. They can redub those movies in foreign markets with foreign movie stars. We'll never know, because we're here in America in our fucking bubble, like a bunch of idiots. But I did think that was interesting. Thank you for pointing that out, Ron. And did you also say something else in here that made me... Oh, looking for a life lesson in this movie after Sausage Party. I definitely felt that this movie had one for sure. Most movies have one, even if they're very simple. And it is. It's about dealing with loss of loved ones, and doing so in a way where, you know, it doesn't bring you down. You can still be sad for the lost past, and... But keep looking forward to the future and look up. You can respect the past and be sad about what's missed, but at the same time, be happy about the life that you did have with those people, and at the same time, be happy about the life you still have now with the people that are still around you. It's kind of the same thing where appreciate what you got now, but also Kubo added a little bit of we'll all be connected again in the great beyond, almost kind of refuting what this all is about anyway. Thanks, Ron. Appreciate that. What's next? I got another email here. This one is from our homie Gabe. Our homie Gabe, who's a friend of the show, has been supporting us for a long time, since the beginning. And he did an episode 188 with us. He came in. He was in town. We didn't have a guest booked. And we had him in. And it was a lot of fun. He did great. So I would recommend checking that out. Here is his email. Email titled Breathe. When you read this, oh man, that's good advice. Okay. Okay, here we go. He writes, "Don't Breathe review. I really liked it. The setup is predictable and almost cliched." Yeah, it is almost cliched. The whole making the guy blind is kind of what undoes the cliche a little bit, you know? And then also making him the ultimate antagonist, and the home invaders are the good guys. Even some of the lines are dumb cliche, like they were said for the trailers. Totally. I did like when we got into the house. The framing was good and the camera movement was cool. I agree. There was actually fantastic camera movement in that movie, because there's a scene where when they first walk into the house, and the way the camera is following the guys as they wander through and they look for the money, the camera is very specifically, like, it pans up and it shows you a skylight. And then it keeps going, and then it shows you, oh, a hammer on a wall. And then the camera keeps going, and then it shows you this, and it shows you that. And as you're watching, you know that these are details to pay attention to that are all going to come back around later in the movie. And sure enough, every single little detail that the camera lingers on in that opening shot of them going into the house all comes back around. It's actually really smart. There were some really neat scenes, like the blind man disappearing into the basement, the scene of his eyes in the darkness. That needs to be experienced. Yeah, dude, I actually forgot about that. There's a shot of him, because he's blind, right? He's got his eyes are fucked up, like they have cataracts or whatever. And there's a shot of him where you see his face, and then, like, they close the door, and it becomes total darkness, and he can't see his face anymore, but he can still see, like, just the tips of his eyes. It's the weirdest fucking thing. It's a strange shot. I actually was very impressed by that. The lead actress had a great performance. If you wanted to see this movie or are into the genre, definitely watch it. It's worth your time. Thanks, Gabe. We appreciate it. Definitely appreciate it. It was a pretty good movie. I liked it. Okay, also you can hit us up on Twitter or Facebook and we'll read what you got to say. So here we go from Facebook. Carmella Lake hit us up. Is Mr. Robot destined to be the greatest TV drama of all time? It's early in its run, but right now I have it number 3 behind Sopranos and Breaking Bad. Interesting. I love Mr. Robot. I love it. It's my favorite show on right now. I think it's fantastic. I think it's amazing. And I'm seeing online some people are like not liking some of the twists of the new season, of the second season. Some people aren't as into this season as they are the last one. And I think those people are fucking dumb. Oh, shit. Bunch of dummies think it sucks. Fuck you guys, robot. Fuck you guys. Obviously, Drusilla Cogman's not here. There's no one else here, so we can't do Drusilla Cogman versus the world. So right back into what we're talking about. I think it's fantastic. I love it. It's such a cinematic show. The framing, the composition, the use of negative space as a TV show is fucking ridiculous. It's so good. Just the opening scene of the second part of the season 2 premiere, where the banker, the E-Corps guy, has to take, what was it, like $2 million in cash to the park, and he's waiting for instructions. That whole scene, oh my god, it's so good. Oh, great show. Is it the third best drama of all time? Man, I don't know. I don't know, man. Of all times? That's a lot of times. That's a lot of shows. What about The Wire? Where does The Wire fit in your top 3? Haven't you seen The Wire? I haven't seen The Wire. Apparently people love The Wire, so I gotta watch it. You know, Drew never saw The Sopranos. I've been delaying it, but I've been meaning to like sit down with him. Like, all right, we're gonna start watching The Sopranos. But that's 7 seasons worth of show. Jesus Christ. It's great. I love it. I'm looking forward to seeing it. It's already been renewed for season 3. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with season 3 and how the story evolves. And I hope it continues down its path. It just keeps getting better and crazier and weirder, and I love it. Also, like to point out that the lead of the show, Rami Malek, is a Middle Eastern Arab descent fella, and you know, very refreshing to see a movie in which, or a TV show, either or, where our main character is a Middle Eastern dude, and Islamic terrorism doesn't come up in any context whatsoever. That's pretty great. You know, what would be just as good as that if Benjamin Bratt. That fucking dude, if he would do a goddamn movie where he didn't play a drug dealer. Please, Benjamin, for once, stop playing cops or drug dealers. You know, I mean, every time I look up on a fucking TV show or a movie, you got a Hispanic character, he's a gangbanger, or he's a drug dealer, or she's a hooker, you know, or she's a loudmouth lady with 10 kids and she's throwing her chicletas at them, you know? The fucking racism. So Mr. Robot's fantastic, I agree. One of the best of all time. I don't know, we gotta let the show keep going. Hell, one of my favorite shows of all time is Deadwood. So is that as good as Deadwood? I don't know yet. I love Deadwood. Also, speaking of another fantastic show that's pretty new, Ricardo Perez hits us up. Stranger Things, kind of stranger than strange. Yeah. Fuck yeah it is, bro. Which is good. We need strange. Give us something weird and different. You want the same old, same old? You want to eat flavorless pudding while watching network TV? Be my guest. Not me. I want the strange. I'm looking forward to Stranger Things too. That's going to be pretty, pretty dope. All right. That's it for the Vox Populi. Thanks a lot, guys. Now let's get into some movie news. All right, first off, let's get into some comic book movie news. This is kind of strange. No pun intended. That's the by accident. Doctor Strange comes out in November of this year. Doctor Strange principal photography has finished. They've done shot the movie. It's been editing. They've been adding the effects now for a while. They're getting it ready to come out in November. But apparently, there are reports that additional scenes were written after production wrapped. That happens sometimes. You know, a movie will get made And then they start editing it, and like, we're missing something. We need to fix this. And they'll have to write a scene and shoot it and insert it in there. What's interesting about this is that these scenes were written by Dan Harmon. Dan Harmon, if you don't know, he's the guy who created Community, wrote that and ran it for the first like 4 or 5 seasons before he left. Other people ran it for a few years, and he came back for like the last season or something weird like that. And he's also the creator of Rick and Morty, a very sci-fi heavy show, which has a lot of scientific sci-fi mumbo jumbo that needs to be explained for their plots to work, but it's always done in a way that works. It doesn't slow the show down, and it's also not done so that it doesn't make any sense or you get lost. So that could be why they brought Dan Harmon in to work on this story that involves magic and these ideas that need to be expressed. And it's just kind of a crazy team up there. I have Dan Harmon working on the Doctor Strange movie after they finish shooting, so we'll see. We'll see if we can figure out, after the movie comes out, where exactly his contributions went. Justice League Dark. Jumping over to the DC world, Justice League Dark is the supernatural, weird version of the Justice League. And for a little while, that was being developed by Guillermo del Toro. He was going to do the Justice League Dark movie for Warner Brothers. He has since dropped out of that. They got a new director signed on, and it's Doug Liman. Doug Liman, the guy who did Go. He broke out in the 90s with Go. He did the first Bourne Identity. He did, most recently, Edge of Tomorrow, which is still one of the best action movies, sci-fi action movies, to come out in the last decade, 15 years. It's so good. He was signed on to do the Gambit movie for a while with Channing Tatum, and then he dropped off of that, and now he's signed on to Justice League Dark. So we'll see when that happens, because he's currently developing a movie with another movie with Tom Cruise, another action movie that he's working on right now. So this would be after that, if it happens. We'll see. Doug Liman has been, his whole career, notorious for waffling on projects, being indecisive in making them, going over budget and over schedule, and being a pain in the ass in the editing room. It's amazing how much trouble he gives people. But his movies, for the most part, make money. And that's why he gets to keep working. He's also a white male, so that helps too. So we'll see if that's going to be any good. John Krasinski has a really funny story that he did on one of these late shows, one of these Tonight shows, about how the reason why he didn't get Captain America was because, I'm sure this is a bit of a joke, but it's still kind of a funny story. I'm just going to paraphrase it here to get it out of the way. But John Krasinski, known as Jim from The Office, and he was also in 13 Hours, where he was a capable action movie guy. He was in the running for Captain America back in 2008, 2009. He was in the running for Captain America, and he was like meeting with Marvel and doing some readings. And at one point, they actually had the Captain America suit, and they had him wear it to see how he looked in it. That's how close he was to getting Captain America. So as he stood there in the Captain America suit, in decent shape, as he describes it, good shape, he felt good about his physical appearance at that time, but not like movie ripped, you know. He felt pretty good in the Captain America suit, and then, I guess, I don't know where they're at, the Marvel offices or whatever, he looks up, and there's Chris Hemsworth walking by as Thor, going, "Hi, mate," and he walks by, and he's Chris Hemsworth. I don't know, I think he cycles up, dude. He does something to get that big for the Thor movies, because he walks by, he's a goddamn giant, looking like Thor, and Krasinski was like, in his super skinny Captain America suit, and he's like, "Nope, not gonna be me, guys. There's no way, no way I'm gonna be standing in the movie next to that dude and look like a superhero." And then Chris Evans got the role, and he's been fantastic in it, so thanks, Chris, for being so good. Let's see here. Okay. There's another Transformers movie coming, guys. And this one sounds weird AF. Transformers : The Last Knight. K-N-I-G-H-T is the name of the story. Production for the movie just switched to the UK, and a report says that in the UK they got a bunch of guys on like horseback and in armor and stuff, like Arthurian times. So apparently the whole The Last Knight is a direct reference to the Knights of the Round Table, and this movie is somehow going to involve that Arthur's sword, the sword in the stone type of thing. Doesn't that sound fucking wackadoo? And a story about gigantic robots that fly around, they shoot missiles, and they do all this shit, but then they need a sword? And then if they were back around Arthurian times as robots on Earth, what were they changing into to hide themselves? They couldn't change a truck. They couldn't be a Mack truck, you know, in like 550 AD England. No, these movies make no sense. And we're getting another one. The Get Shorty TV show has its lead, and its lead is Chris O'Dowd. Who is Chris O'Dowd? He's that Irish fella who played the cop in, what's that movie? Bridesmaids. He was also in a really good movie, Calvary, with Brendan Gleeson. And if you saw me, recognize him, like, oh, that guy. He's the lead. So that's that. In the alternate universe, the Fast and the Furious movies don't have Dwayne Johnson. Apparently, they have Tommy Lee Jones. That's right. A report came out that when they were making Fast and the Furious 5, the role of Hobbs, the guy who was tracking down Dom Toretto and his team of criminals, was going to be played by Tommy Lee Jones, which I could see. It would have been a version of his The Fugitive character or his U.S. Marshals character, you know? No nonsense, talking fast, just real tough dude, like, let's go get him, that type of guy. It would have been perfectly fine. There obviously would not have been any Dom Toretto Hobbs fights. There'd be no talk of a Hobbs spinoff. Hell, I would not have been surprised if Tommy Lee Jones was in the fifth one, if he did do that movie, and that was the only one he was in, and then his character disappeared. Would not have been surprised at all. But apparently his role went to The Rock, and I love Tommy Lee Jones, but The Rock is perfect in these movies. He's great for that character. I'm looking forward to it. Also, I don't think I pulled this story, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. This is how I'm going to end the show. Guys, we've been, the last couple weeks, covering the apparent Dwayne Johnson-Vin Diesel feud. I say apparent for a reason. A few weeks ago, Dwayne Johnson put out an Instagram post calling out some of his male co-stars and their candy asses. Right? A weird comment for most other people, but he's a wrestler. That's going to come into this. He called out, usually when Dwayne Johnson posts on Instagram, he's a great follow on Instagram, on social media, because he's super positive. He writes very long posts that are all very, very positive and very, very real. And sometimes he does get real and gets a little, you know, not so positive, but he dresses everything up. Anyway, he doesn't use social media to slag people. That's what he doesn't do. So the fact that he did this a couple weeks ago is a little surprising. That's why it made news. And then Vin Diesel, he came out. He was like all cryptic about it. About, oh, you know, I'm going to tell the full story soon. I'm going to tell everyone how it really happened. And then there's reports that the two of them met in Atlanta. And they had a closed door meeting between the two of them to hash everything out, right? Reports now say, get this, guys, fucking get this. Reports are now saying, inside reports, anonymous sources, the Dwayne The Rock Johnson Vin Diesel feud is a fucking wrestling work. Professional wrestling. Guys, next April, 2017, April 5th, I think, is the release date for Furious 8. A week, maybe two after that, you know what's going down at Camping World Stadium here in Orlando, Florida? Motherfucking WrestleMania, bro. WrestleMania. We're just going to feature Dwayne Johnson versus Vin Diesel in a match. Can you believe it? What? What? My mind is blown. Is your mind blown? It should be. Because that's what we're building up to. It's a fucking work. Why else would Dwayne Johnson call anyone a candy ass? He hasn't done that since 1999. Candy asses. Is he going to ask Vin Diesel if he knows what Hobbs is cooking? Guys, it's a work. And I, for one, endorse this. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. If they go through with it, it kind of sucks now that the word got out, that the rumor is out that this is how it's going down. I hope they don't cancel it. I hope it doesn't ruin it. And that WrestleMania comes around, they fucking, they fake fight. I want to see that shit. Oh my God. I want to see Vin Diesel fake wrestle, fake fight so bad. Man, I would love to see Vin Diesel in the ring with Simon Time, get his ass kicked. Simon Time would destroy him. Like, oh, you think you can just step into the ring and wrestle, bro? I've been doing this for a decade. Let me introduce you to my friend. This folding chair. Or the wooden table. Anyway, so it's a work, you guys. Hysterical. I can't wait. Can't wait for WrestleMania. And that brings us to the end of the show, which means even though it's just me, I ask you for a little bit of help so we could do this.
We give you the questions. You give us the answers. Time for the lightning round.
Guys, I asked you for questions that you gave them to me. I have them right here. I'm going to read them, and I'm going to answer them, and then we're going to get out of here. I hope you're ready. I'm going to start the clock, and go. Number one, who's a good boy? Me. I'm a good boy. Number two, who's the black private dick that's a sex machine for all the chicks? Mario Van Peebles. Number three, why haven't they made Spaceballs : The Search for More Money? Because that was a joke within the first movie. That's why they didn't make it. Number four, why haven't they made Spaceballs 3 : The Search for Spaceballs 2 : The Search for More Money? That's because that's not the title of that. Spaceballs 3 is just called as... Mel Brooks said a few years ago he wanted to make Spaceballs 3 : The Search for Part 2, which is what is involved. So you almost got the title right, but I'd totally be down for Spaceballs 3 : The Search for Part 2, by the way. Especially if that's a literal title and that's really what they're doing. That sounds amazing. Number five, when will then be now? Soon. Number six, did you guys see Tickled yet? No, we did not. Number seven, is the Brokeback Mountain remake an attempt to make porn more mainstream? I don't think there is a Brokeback Mountain remake. I think this is a joke. However, you want to talk about mainstreaming porn, you can go to Netflix and check out Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac Volume 1 and Volume 2. You can check out Gaspar Noé's Love, also on Netflix. Those are two very recent attempts to mainstream porn in cinema. You can also check out Michael Winterbottom's 9 Songs. It's about 10 years old, but another movie featuring graphic, real intercourse between characters. And you can watch those movies and know that pornography will never be as mainstream as it was, weirdly, in the 70s when Deep Throat came out in theaters across the country and made $25 million fucking dollars. That couldn't happen today. A movie about a woman whose clit is in her throat, so she deep throats dicks to get off, made $25 million in the 70s. No one would even try to make that movie now, let alone put it out at the AMC playing at the fucking Altamont Mall. What's next? Number eight. What is the one thing Meatloaf won't do for love? Butt stuff. Number nine. You guys want to go see a dead body? Nope. Number 10. Two fighters against a Star Destroyer. Yep. Number 11. Did you order the code red? No, I hate Mountain Dew. Number 12. Can you cry underwater? I can cry anywhere because I have a lot of roiling emotions just under the surface dying to be set free to come out. So I think I can cry anywhere. But can people generally cry underwater? I don't think so. Number 13. Why are highways built so close to the ground because you gotta keep your feet on the floor if you're gonna reach for the stars? And finally, number 14, in stadiums, why are stands made for sitting? Stands are made for the sitting for the same reason driveways are made for parking, parkways are made for driving, because semantics is fun and words are ridiculous. We are out of here, guys. I'm done. We'll be back. Episode 191 next week. And things should be back to normal. I hope you enjoyed this ridiculous brouhaha. And remember, break up the big banks, read more books, free Mumia Abu-Jamal, and download the Anarchist Cookbook and learn how to make yourself some napalm. We are out of here.
the after show, guys.
Paris, we just have to wait now. Layla, Layla.
What's up, everyone? Open up this after show with a little bit of Club Kuru. That's K-U-R-U, Club Kuru, with the song Layla. How's it going, guys? It's me, Chris Crespo, doing a bit of an after show for you for extra entertainment. If you want it, it's there if you want it. If you don't, you can ignore it. That's how this works. I'm going to play some music. I'm going to ramble about some shit. And it's going to be bad. So don't expect anything profound, I think. Just stop listening. Thanks, guys. You might want to stop listening because I'm not that prepared right now. I'm recording early. I'm recording early before I do the normal show. I'm recording the after show. Kind of like a pre-show, but we're doing it later. It's a warm-up, but there's going to be a big gap of time between when I do this and when I do a normal show, so any warming up will be... Imagine if you went to go play, like you're going to play a basketball game in the afternoon, so you stretched, like first thing in the morning you stretched, you took some shots, and then you took some laps, and then you went down to the couch, and you sat there and you watched TV for 4 hours, and then you went outside and jumped into the game. That wouldn't work, right? Doesn't work that way? What am I talking about? Guys! What am I talking about? So, how's it going? Are you still listening? Why are you still listening? I told you not to. Can't you tell already this is not going to be good? Listen, I appreciate it. I appreciate you listening. But you're just hurting yourself. This is a cry for help is what it is. On your part, not on my part. I'm fine. I'm not crying for help. I just cracked on the mics. I turned on the program, cracked on the mic, hit record, put on some music. That's all I'm doing. What are you doing? What are you doing right now? Don't tweet me. I don't care. You're probably what, doing laundry? That's fine. You know what I do when I listen to podcasts? A lot of my podcast listening actually happens these days on Saturday, like morning, because I'm sweeping and mopping and dusting and cleaning up all around the house. Doing laundry, doing all those chores, that kind of shit. And also doing some writing. Although when I write, it's a little harder than a podcast. Music is easier because music can be in the background and I can write. Whereas if it's a podcast, if I'm not listening, if the podcast is just in the background, then I'm not really hearing them. It's just, you know, wah, 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 wah. So. What was my point? Guys, why are you listening to this? Why are you this far into it? You know why? Because you're cool. Because you're cool and I respect that. So, the song's ending. Let's see, where are we gonna jump to next? This song, this is an Every Time I Die song, and to me it just sounds like pure panic in rock and roll form. Check this out, it's called Buffalo 666. Listen to a lot of Every Time I Die lately. I listened to them a lot when they were first around, early 2000s, their first few albums. I already started listening to them on the second album and then went back and got that first one, and then Hot Damn came out was the third one, and that's when they started blowing up. After that was Gutter Phenomenon, then The Big Dirty. When The Big Dirty came out, I was like, eh. Now their last three albums, Big Dirty, Gutter Phenomenon, and well, those two more together. Those then a hot damn. They're all starting to sound the same. They were growing, and now they're starting to sound the same. I'm getting kind of bored with this. I moved on. When they put out a new album, I would like listen to it, but then didn't really give it that much of a chance. They got two singles out on Spotify right now for a new album coming out next month. They're both dope. Because of that, I went back and listened to a lot of Every Time I Die that I missed. One album I outright don't like. Two of them are okay. This one, New Junk Aesthetic, is fucking fantastic. And I'm really looking forward to the new one. Low Teens coming out next month. So that's very cool. Every Time I Die. Also coming out with a new album is the Dillinger Escape Plan, one of my favorite bands of all time. I've listened to them since the late 90s. And they announced that not only do they have a new album coming out in October, but it will be their last album. They will go on one last tour, and then they're going to retire. Average band age around 40. The guitarist who started the band, Ben Wiseman, turned 40, and as much as he loves the music, he loves the band, he has acknowledged that over all these years, the only way they've been able to make a go at it is by having minimal crew. I mean, these guys are legends in the metal industry. They've toured the world over. Well, let me pick another song. I'm gonna pick another Every Time I Die song. They've toured the world over, and they have a huge following, and they've only been able to live on that band by not having managers or roadies, by having minimal crews, doing a lot of the work themselves. So as great as they were, as legendary as they are, still not even a barely a sustainable business model. But these guys are also all musical geniuses, and they'll find ways to work behind the scenes, I'm sure, do other projects that will actually bring them money, more money, so that they can retire. I hope so, because they've entertained the hell out of us for decades now. Two solid decades of Dillinger Escape Plan entertainment. So hopefully they'll be coming around town here, and I'll be going to see them, and that'll be the first concert I go to in like a year, 2 years. Man, there's a point where I would go to a concert. There's like a year, year and a half stretch where I went to a concert every month. Once a month. Almost made it a point. Who's in town? Where are we going? House of Blues, Hard Rock, Social, The Beecham a couple times. I'm not the biggest fan of The Beecham. Man, I've seen so many bands, so many artists. And now it's like, ugh. I'm also mid-30s, depending on the show, the artist. If I go to the show, I could very well be like the old guy there. Which, and I remember being a 20-year-old going to a concert and being like, oh, look at that weird old dude. And then I'm going to be the weird old dude at the bar drinking, watching this band. I don't know, man. Plus, concerts are getting too expensive. At least the big ones that I want to go see. You know, like the Prophets of Rage show that's in Tampa. Drew's went to the one in Brooklyn this weekend. Man, I didn't even bother checking. I bet you those tickets are so expensive. Anytime any band comes and plays at Camping World Stadium, I fucking hate that name. Those bands are $150 a ticket to sit in the nosebleeds. Fuck you guys. The only band I would pay an exorbitant price to see these days is Tool. And Tool actually came to town in January, and I couldn't buy tickets because I was on Ticketmaster. 10 a.m. As soon as tickets went on sale, hit buy, and they were unavailable because Ticketmaster is a bunch of bullshit. Shit was sold out. Tickets were on StubHub immediately for hundreds of dollars. So, fuck you guys. So, I haven't been to a concert forever. Dillinger comes around, I'm going to do my damnedest to go. I gotta go. They'll probably play the Beecham, which means the sound will be muddy, which sucks because they may play the Social. Last time I saw them, last few times I've seen them, I think it was at the Social, which is a better venue because the sound is great and it's smaller and just fucking fantastic. Just fucking fantastic there. Anyway, Dillinger Escape Plan. Gonna miss you guys. Looking forward to this new album. They have a single out on Spotify. And it's fucking intense. Because your heart is no place.
Big Finish. Alrighty. You know what? First off, I'm surprised if you are still listening. How's it going? Why? How's it going? I appreciate it. You are one of the super listeners. I hate calling people fans. I like calling them listeners. But I think if you are this deep into the episode, you are a fan of what we do, of what I do. And I really do appreciate that. I really do. And I guess because you know why? You know why I know no one gets this far? I'm always surprised whenever someone like tweets at me on Twitter at I Am Chris Crespo. Whenever someone tweets at me something that was said in the show by someone or that was done really late, you know, towards the end, or like even someone like quotes something that happened in the after show or mentions something that happened in the after show, I'm always shocked when someone points that out. Because I'm like, damn, you listened that deep. I'm assuming almost no one's listening right now. And it's not, that's not, it's just an assumption out of nowhere. Plenty of podcast devices out there, services provide very detailed metrics. And a lot of people out there, they get those metrics, they crunch the numbers, and they give you the averages. And the average podcast listener only listens to 50% of an episode. Can you believe that? Most people stop listening halfway through an episode. How weird is that? They just get bored with it, I guess. That's part of why we do the plugs at the top, at the beginning of the second half. Instead of waiting for the very end to do the plugs, I get them done in the middle to make sure people are going to hear them and to get them out of the way. And then we can always end on a high note instead of ending with plugs. Also know that I don't even know how they figure this out, but the preferred podcasts, like the most popular podcasts, typically have shorter episodes. So like 22 minutes, something like that, like the length of a half hour sitcom without commercials in it. So like 22 minutes, that's like the perfect length for a podcast episode. None of the podcasts I listen to are less than an hour per ep. Some of them are up to 2.5. Tom and Dan Friday free shows can be over 2 hours. Some certain episodes of Comedy Bang Bang can get up to 2 hours. Make It Weird, was it? You Made It Weird with Pete Holmes? Some of those get to 2.5-3 hours. They're marathons. Have you heard a Joe Rogan show? The Joe Rogan Experience? He put out 4-hour eps. And his show is one of the most popular. So I don't know where they're getting this the 20 minute thing from, but nothing I listen to is 20 minutes long. And but that is sort of the thought process behind giving you that bonus, the bonus episodes in the middle of the week that are shorter than the normal ep. Give you a nice short one in the middle to tide you over, get you to the long ones every week, right? Anyway, so if you're listening this deep into the show, you are surpassing what the average podcast listener does. And I even know with my show, Stitcher is the only service I use that gives me such detailed metrics. The other metrics I get aren't as detailed. Stitcher lets me know that, just like the average, yet for the most part, most of my episodes on Stitcher are listened to about 50% of the way through. Whenever I see some episodes that have multiple listens and they're like 100% complete, I'm like, holy shit, that's crazy. And then sure enough, I check a few days later, a couple more listens will come in and knock that all the way down, because people might listen for a couple minutes and be like, I'm not feeling this. Which happens. I do that all the time. All that to say, I guess this is a decent time maybe to do a sort of a state of the podcast update. A state of the Crespo Diso. Because if you're still listening, that means you care. I assume. Now, that's an assumption. Iced coffee, good stuff. What time is it? Okay, we're doing fine here. Yeah, so what's up with the podcast? What's going on here with this show? I don't know, guys. To be honest, I don't, between you and me, I don't know.
I don't know, dude.
I mean, I still enjoy doing the show, obviously. That's why I keep doing it. Guest, no guest. Even Drew, no Drew. I'm just doing it by myself. I'm enjoying this. It's an outlet. It's creative. I'm a writer. Writing is a use of words. Talking is words. It's just without editing. So it's the worst writing possible, really. It's stream of conscious, unedited writing, which is garbage. So what are you getting? This is my audio garbage as opposed to my written garbage, which no one really... Well, you see the reviews online, but that's not really... When I say I'm a writer, I write way more than film reviews. It's just that that's the only thing that's out there right now. I have a computer full of short stories, half-written, quarter-written, started, incomplete novels, 7 or 8 completed screenplays, another 7 or 8 incomplete ones. I have a whole bunch of story outlines that I don't know if I want to take them down the novel road, the screenplay. The thing is, I got too many ideas and a lot of them stink, but I gotta plow through them, get them out, and then eventually you stumble across the thing that's good. I think I might have stumbled across it. I'm not sure. All that being said, so you're getting the audio garbage via podcasting, and I think after 3 years of doing this via podcast, on top of the 2 years of doing SBK Live, as well as the subsequent 3 years of weekly call-ins to the Curtis Earth Show, I do believe I have the handle of this. I think I've been able to harness the verbal diarrhea in a way that is entertaining to some people, as evidenced by the downloading numbers, the downloads, which they are going up very slowly, painfully slowly. Almost, you know how like you gain weight over the years? I mean, I've always been fat, but you know, probably you know how you gained weight over the years, but really, really slowly. You think everything's been the same, everything's normal, and then you see a picture of yourself from 5 years ago, and you're like, oh, what? That's me. I was thin. I'm not thin anymore. What happened? That's kind of sort of how this feels. I'm not saying that the show is not obese compared to its thin beginnings, but there has been some growth, and on a long enough graph, long enough timeline, you can see the gradual uptick. But at this rate, if the show was going to be successful in any meaningful way, I would have to continue at this pace for at least another 10, 12 years of doing this. At least. For a reference point, I'm 3 years in, 3.5 years in. January will be our 4th anniversary. Boy, that's a lot of podcasting, guys. That is a lot of podcasting. So I don't know. I don't know what the end game of the show is going to be. I don't even know how wanted the show is. I know some of you love the show. Some of you download it immediately, listen immediately. You tweet me, you let me know, and I love you guys. You're the best. But you guys are a very small percentage of the total amount of downloads. Like, you're probably, the few of you are probably the ones that are listening right now. Everyone else has stopped listening. But that's where my numbers are coming from, and I need to get those people involved somehow. All those passive listeners, I need to get them invested in the show enough to ask for stickers and tweet about it and Facebook about it and share it with their friends and try to get more people listening. Because that's the only way this thing's going to go anywhere. Otherwise, it really is just going to be nothing but a little hobby that I, over the years, when I look back on it, I will see that I have poured an inordinate amount of time and money into. But isn't that what most hobbies are, anyway? It's either this or a fucking model railroad set. Okay, let's see here.
Yeah, so I'm asking how, overall, how wanted is this show? If I stopped doing the show, what if this was the last episode? You know, what if I just never did another episode, never uploaded ever again, never updated another social media account? Who would miss it? A few of you would. I know a few of you would miss it. Would miss the each episode, the different guests I have in, and the games we play, and, you know, the goofiness of it all. I know some of you would miss it. But I have a feeling a lot of people that listen would just be like, eh. I'm just going to... Well, there's 2 hours of entertainment, 2.5 hours of entertainment a week gone. That's fine. I'll replace that with one of the other 30,000 podcasts that are out there. Literally. Something like that. According to Stitcher, anyway. Multiple tens of thousands of podcasts. That's how many podcasts are out there. I wonder how many are in the state of Florida. I'll tell you this. In the state of Florida... I haven't even bothered researching. I don't give a fuck. In the state of Florida, I have the best movie podcast. Cinema Crespediso, no one beats it. I don't give a fuck. All right? It's fun. It's entertaining. It's consistent. It's, after 3 years, you get an episode every week without fail, and they're all entertaining. Some of them are fucking downright great. Some of them are a little weak. Sure. You know, you make that much content, they're all not going to be perfect. Some of them are a little weak, but some of them that bounce out with the ones that are fucking amazing with our... fantastic guests. Go back to any of those 10 or 12 SBK episodes we have, the anniversary episodes with Tom the Beer Guy and his movie and theater production experience before he went into becoming a beer maestro. You know, any other episodes with the writer, local writer Amy Drew Thompson, any of them with Etchy or Chico from, you know, they've had other podcast experience. I've had plenty of guests on here who are all awesome. We all have a great time. You know how I know we have a great time? Because the episode's like 2 hours long. It takes a while to record them. Every time we do it, it goes by like that. It goes by so fast. Every single time. It's amazing. Check out any Curtis Earth episode. They're all fantastic. The Simon Time episodes are great. I always get great feedback whenever he's on the show. I put a lot of work into the show. I prep it, you know? You should see the notes that I sit down with. And the stories that we pull. And then you guys contribute with the Vox Populi, the emails and stuff. And we got Drew reading all that stuff. And it's we put a lot into it. And I work really hard to make the type of show that I want to hear, which is one that's pretty quick moving, has a lot of segments, has games, and little surprises here and there popping up every now and then, which is what I try to do. So I'm going to say this is the best goddamn movie podcast in Florida. Yes, I am saying movie podcast. I'm not going to say just normal podcast. To be quite honest, I love A Mediocre Time with Tom and Dan. I like their show more than I like my show. What are you going to do? I've been listening to them longer than I've been doing this. They are partly what inspired what this is. Same thing with SBK Live. I've been listening to those guys longer than I've been doing any of this. So I like their show more than I like my show. It's just natural. They inspired me. Cinema Crespediso is a spin-off podcast from SBK Live. Born out of that. Without SBK Live, there would be no Cinema Crespediso whatsoever. So, just based on the shows that I listen to that I like, I wouldn't say this is the best Florida podcast. I will say, though, it's the best movie one. For sure. The best movie one. Speaking of best podcasts, in A Mediocre Time, the Orlando Weekly, the local free rag, they do every year their popularity contest where they have like, I don't know, 50 different categories you can vote on for best of the best restaurants, best sushi, best theme park, best escape room, best brunch, best, you know, radio show, radio host, best Twitter feed, all stuff like that. I don't know if they started doing this year or last year, but they added best podcast. They had to, because A Mediocre Time with Tom and Dan, they won best radio show a couple years in a row when they weren't even on the radio, when they were a podcast. So they had to add podcasts. They've been winning that since. So 4 or 5 years in a row now, Tom and Dan, their show has won because they have a gigantic audience. I'm going to estimate their Friday free shows, I would say get at least 10,000 downloads. Unique downloads, by the way. I would say that's how many listeners they have. Base. They probably have a little more. To be successful like that, to have a subscription model and the commercials, and yeah, that's how many people are listening. And they have a very active, very I've seen it in person. They have a very active listener base. So when they say, please vote for us, please nominate us, please vote for us, done. It gets done and they win. That's why when you check the Orlando Weekly Awards this year, they've won like 10 different categories. It's absurd. Which then makes me laugh at all the other podcasts that lobbied to get nominated and to get voted for and thought at any point that they had a chance of winning. You know? And yeah, I'm not really talking shit about these other podcasts, but it's a little silly, guys. And I don't think any of you guys are even listening right now. Because, you know, that's the thing. You guys aren't even listening. So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and maybe I will talk a little bit of shit. Are you listening? I don't think you are. Because what were you thinking? Going up against the T&D media juggernaut. That's insane. Trying to take that on. Trying to take on that Goliath. Guess what? In this case, Goliath wins. Batted that goddamn slingshot out of David's hand and stepped on him. So, also... And here's the thing. Now, here's the thing with this. I am not trolling for any sympathy, or don't tweet me. Be like, oh, I think your show's blah, blah, blah. Don't give me any of that shit. I just want to state this. Just put it out there. All right. And this isn't, this is not coming from a place of bitterness or anger or anything like that whatsoever. I've known about this poll. They do it every year. They announce it every year. I see it on Facebook and all the shit. I see all the other shows promoting it. And I never promoted. I never ask people to go here and vote for my show, vote for Cinema Crespi. So I don't bother doing that. Again, because it's going against the T&D juggernaut. No, pointless. And also, it's like, it's a popularity contest. And I'm not gonna sweat it. I ain't gonna sweat it. That being said, there are shows that were nominated. A bunch of shows that were nominated. I saw the nomination list. That are, quite frankly, they haven't been around as long as mine, as long as Cinema Crespi, so they're not as good. There's shows with no structure. There's shows that are just people cracking mics, talking, and then that's it. Talking about whatever. And that's got to be the most played out format of podcasting and talk show these days, right? What would be, the Crespo Show? Cinema Crespi is a movie podcast. It's very specific. It's a niche audience. And I think these days, if you're going to have a podcast, your podcast has to have a purpose, a specificity. It has to have a category. You can't just be like, it's amazing. I see it on Twitter all the time. People's podcast profiles, the bio on Twitter, it's like, insert number of friends, you know, two friends, three friends, four friends, just a few friends. It always says that. Oftentimes drinking, talking about pop culture, talking about what's happening. It's amazing how many Twitter bios add and trying to be funny about it. It's amazing how many add trying to be, and not saying being funny or in a comedic way. They admit that they're merely trying to be funny, and that is the worst. The worst. The whole show format of people sitting around talking is just like about nothing. It's pretty played. It's pretty 10 years ago. If you haven't been doing it for years now, i.e. Tom and Dan, e.g. Tom and Dan, they've been doing it forever. That's fine. They're in, you know, they're like grandfathered in at this point. If I was going to stop doing Cinema Crespo and started doing another show, the Chris Crespo Show, it's not going to be like me and Drew and a third person sitting around a table talking about whatever is new this week. It ain't that, you know, that's for sure. I think I already mentioned on a previous ramble or after show or whatever, I mentioned if I was going to have another show that was more of a generic show, the Chris Crespo Show, it would be the fucking big mouth, loud mouth, obnoxious, left-wing version of Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity type shows. You know? yelling about how handguns are tools of murder and should be banned. Handguns, guys, handguns. You hunting enthusiasts can keep your fucking stupid rifles. Don't need a goddamn handgun. Hate handguns. Pistolas. Revolvers. It would be a show like that where I'm yelling about racism and there's a lot of talk about racism. And you know why I would be talking about racism? Because that shit affects me still to this day as a Puerto Rican in America. You know, there's like some poll just came out where something like 30 or 40% of Americans don't even know that Puerto Ricans are American citizens. So, yeah, that would be what I would be. So I would still be on a very specific path. And most people listening to this in the Crespo Diso probably wouldn't go listen to that. And people that would start listening to that probably wouldn't be listening to this. It's a different audience. Probably a bigger audience because it's politics and it's outrage. I'd be adding to outrage culture in a way. But my thing would also be solutions as well. I would try to add as many solutions as possible, but also very, very progressive, left-wing liberal. Maybe even go the Limbaugh Hannity route of going further than I actually believe. You know what I mean? Declaring like we need like 100% tax on Wall Street dividends or some bullshit like that, or something I don't believe in that's just so outlandish and progressive. But you gotta balance out that fucking right wing hate so much, man. Anyway, so that's what I would be doing if I wasn't doing a movie podcast. But I am doing a movie podcast that wasn't even nominated for Best Podcast in Orlando, let alone win. I knew it wasn't gonna win. Second, third place, I don't give a shit about that. Not even nominated, though. It's like, I don't know, guys. I don't know. Should I care about that? Like, I do, but I don't. It is a stupid popularity contest. And it's all for Orlando Weekly to make money. The people who win get first, second, third place. You want your plaques? Great. Apparently, this year, it costs, like, you can get your plaque, your shitty plaque, only if you buy, like, an advertising package for, like, $200, $300, $400. Then you get an ad, and you get this, and you get that, and then you also get your plaque. Orlando Weekly is just trying to make money and trying to stay relevant. They suck. They've sucked for years. I've read maybe 3 good articles in the Orlando Weekly since I've been in Orlando, going back to 2000. That's why it's free. Anyone listening to the show that's from Orlando Weekly, sorry. You write for a shit rag, but you do. And you know what? You probably don't. No one listens to this show works for Orlando Weekly because they don't have any taste over there. So it's all just a scheme for them to make money, and then it's a popularity contest to boost up the egos of everyone who's participating. And also, again, like, I'm not bitter or anything, I'm just pointing out the absurdity of it. A contest, a poll that has, like, best dog-friendly sidewalk cafe, okay? Best knitting shop. Really, really small niche categories like that. Has all a bunch of shit like that. Doesn't have best film critic. Not best film critic. A very basic service provided in cities across the country. Around the world. Best film critic. Not even a category. And you know what? I would not be surprised at all if that became a category. And then like some Orlando Weekly writers got nominated. And then they nominated Hal Boedeker, the TV writer over at Orlando Sentinel. Because the Orlando Sentinel doesn't have a film critic anymore. It used to be Roger Moore. Not that Roger Moore, but a different Roger Moore. I think he's in like Minneapolis right now. They eliminated their film critic position a few years ago. So, I mean, we all know the fact, though, by default, I'm the best film critic in Orlando. I'm not saying it's got to be recognized by a shitty free magazine. We know. Anyway. So, congratulations to Tom and Dan for being a gigantic monolith of a monster again. I told him that personally when I was on a Corporate Time earlier this week. You can check out a Corporate Time with Tom Dan, which won Best Radio Show. That is actually a syndicated radio show, and they won that. So I made an appearance this week on Orlando's Best Radio Show, a Corporate Time with Tom and Dan. You can listen to that. We talked about what else? Movies. And also congrats to Ross McCoy for winning Best Local Comedian. Good job, dude. Good job. So all that being said, what's the state of Cinema Crespo Diso? Been around for a few years, becoming, I'm just saying a fact here, podcast institution of Florida, becoming one of those. That's the thing. Around the 2-3 year mark is when a lot of podcasts fart out. You think they're getting a hold, a foothold. You think they're growing. You think they're doing good. And then they just stop for various reasons. So, speaking of podcasts that stop, the only person who mentioned Cinema Crespi, so in conjunction with the Orlando Weekly poll, best of poll, is Ivan Lopez of Rampant Radio, who he had to stop doing the Rampant Radio stuff for a while for health reasons, which sucks. So, brother, I know you're not listening because you hate talk shows. He hates talk shows. He does. So he doesn't listen to anything, I think. But shout out to him. He's awesome. He's the only one who mentioned the show and the poll in the same sentence. And, man, I hope you get better, bro. You're a really nice guy. Ivan Lopez. Get Rampant Radio going again. So, yeah, I don't know, guys. I don't know what the show, if the show is going to really mean something, it's got to stick around for a few more years at least. So I have to decide if I really want it to mean something. And I'm not looking for feedback. Thank you for listening. Not looking for feedback. So it's a decision I've got to make on my own, which I will do. Will I share it with you? I don't know. I'm going to be honest with you. It may not happen in 2016. It may not happen in 2017. It may happen in 2 weeks. I don't know. I'm telling you, one day you're going to go online and everything Crespedista related is going to be shut down. The Twitter, the Facebook, shut down. Still debating on when that day comes. Do I also shut down the website and make those reviews inaccessible? Or do I just shut down the podcast feed, or do I keep it up there? Because that costs money. Now we're talking about hosting fees, domain fees, etc., you know. Podcasts cost me money monthly, guys. So how long do I keep it up? Do I let people listen to discover back episodes? So what's the point of keeping it up for people to discover back episodes if I'm not doing more, if the show's over? The only reason TV shows get syndication deals on TV is because so people can make money off it. Having the old shows up with no one making money off it doesn't make any sense. So one day, guys, I don't know when. It might not happen to 2020. People listening to this right now may not even be around in 2020 still listening. They may have gotten off the Crespedista bandwagon. And my other listeners by then, who knows? Who knows what the future has? The only thing I know that it has is one day, everything will be shut down. Shut down. All right, guys. We're gonna bring this one home here. Let's bring it home. So my point is, just enjoy it while you got it. Especially people listening right now, because you're the ones who actually seem to care. Enjoy it while you got it. Because one day, most likely without announcement, it's just gonna be gone. Why will it be gone? Because that's the point I have decided to move on to really put my efforts into something else. Probably writing. That's the thing. This takes away from my writing time. I still try to write as much as I can. But I just spent almost an hour recording this. I could have been writing. Could have added another chapter to the recent story I'm writing. Could have done a pass on a screenplay. You know? So. Or I could be reading something. Reading is just as important as writing when you want to be a writer. You gotta write, but you also gotta read. You gotta read a lot. I haven't read anything in a few days. That's how I think. How much reading do you do? I haven't read anything in a few days. I need to read something. So enjoy it while you got it. I like doing it. I still like doing it a lot. I still love the show. We have new stickers that we're getting ready to produce. Sticker, business card stickers, where it'll we'll send you business cards that you can also peel a sticker off of it. How cool is that? So we're gonna have new stickers coming. Got a guest booked next week. Yeah, he's a pretty solid guest. He's gonna stick around, and he's probably still listening. He might be one of the few listening. Shout out to Steve Etchy, Radio Tidbits. What's the fuss? He's a great dude. A fun guest to have. He'll be on 191 next week. Help me out because I booked someone and they canceled. Man, booking guests is such a pain in the ass. I love the show. I love doing it. I like having guests in here. I love talking to people, getting their opinions, mixing it up, joking around. But booking guests is such a pain in the fucking ass. Oh my God. There are certain people who I dearly love in life. Good friends, I would consider them. And would help them if they need it. People that I have booked on the show in the past. You may be wondering, there's a couple people who you haven't heard on here in a while. And it's because I can tell you without... And don't guess. Don't try to guess who this is. There's little details about one person I booked twice. The first time they no-showed. The second time they canceled like the day before or 2 days before. So you're like, I'm like, you know what? Fine. Also, canceling without offering any sort of alternative. Any sort of, I can't do this, but I can do this date or this date, you know. That really ticks me off. I had another person who I booked three times over the course of 2 or 3 months. Canceled on me the days leading up to the show each time. So I can take a hint. You don't want to be on the show. Why agree in the first place? Because I don't want to hurt my feelings and then you're going to cancel on me? Three times in a row, leave me scrambling for a guest last minute or not having one. So without saying who, there are a few people who I haven't asked back because booking them has been a pain in the ass. You know? If I book you on the show, I want to... That's the thing. I want to book people on the show that want to be on the show, that are excited to be here. Curtis Earth has expressed to me how much he likes to be on the show and he wants to keep coming on. That's why I keep asking him on. Simon Time has expressed how he wants to be on the show a whole lot and he loves doing it. So that's why I'm asking him back. Amy Drew Thompson, that's why she keeps coming back now, because she wants to be here and you can feel the energy when she's here. So, you know, if I book a person and then they tell me 2 weeks later, oh shit, I forgot, I changed my plans, I can't do it, well then fine, you know. I appreciate it, peace out, but then I'm not going to bother again. Especially if I'm not going to be like, I could do it next week. Give me an alternative date. So, booking guests is a pain in the ass. So, shout out to Etchy for being reliable. Surprisingly reliable. I really appreciate that, dude. Looking forward to seeing you next weekend. Hopefully, you'll have a radio spot that we can play to, right? Right? Probably not. Guys, I'm done. I'm out of here. Hope you enjoy the show, and hope you enjoyed the after show, my pre-show after show. We'll be back with a bonus show this week, and then 191 next week. I'm out of here.